Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jai Gopi Janava
Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Chaiham Madhirai Nashtapayishu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Gantra Shrimad Bhagavatam Canto 9 Text Chapter 15 Text 27 through 30 We can chant the Sanskrit to text 30, and then I'll go back to 27. You want me? Okay. Okay, sounds good. Alright, I'll start from 27 and make my way to 30, then we'll chant together. So, text 27. Atarajani niryate rama ashram agata shudva tattasya doratmyam chukrodahir ivahata. Thereafter, Kartavir Arjuna, having left with the Kamadenu, Parashrama returned to the ashrama. When Parashrama, the youngest son of Jamadagni, heard about Kartavirarjuna's nefarious deed, he became as angry as a trampled snake. Text 28. Goram adaya parasum satunam varma karmakam anvadhavata durmaso migrendra iva yutapam. Taking up his fierce chopper and his shield, his bow, and a quiver of arrows, Lord Parashuram, exceedingly angry, chased Kartavir Arjuna just as a lion chases an elephant. Text 29. Tam apatam brigu varyam ajosha danu daram banaparasvadhadyudam aneya charmambaram arkadharmabhir yutam jatabhir dadrishe purim vishan. As King Kartavirarjuna entered his capital, Mahishmati Puri, he saw Lord Parashuram, the best of the Bhrigu dynasty, coming after him holding a chopper, shield, bow, and arrows. Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deerskin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like the sunshine. Text 30.
Achodayadashtiratasvapatibhir Kadashibanarshiti satakni shaktivi Akshohini saptadasatibhishasanshanas Tarama eko bhagavan asudaya. Achodayadashtiratasvapatibhir Kadasibanarshiti Satagni Shaktibhi Akshohini Saptadasatibhishanas Tarama Eko Bhagavan Asudaya. Achodayadashtiratasvapatibhir Kadashibanarshisatagnishaktivihi Akshohini Saptadasatibhishanas Tarama Eko Bhagavan Asudaya Achodayadashtiratasvapatibhir Kadasivanashtisatagnishaktibhir Akshohini Saptadasatibhina Tarama Eko Bhagavan Asudaya. Eko Bhagavana Sude Achodaya. He sent for fighting Hasti with elephants, Ratha with chariots, Ashva with horses, Pativi and with infantry, Gada with clubs, Asi with swords, Bana with arrows, Rishti with the weapons called Rishtis, Satagni with the weapons called Satagnis, Shaktivi with weapons called Shaktis, Akshohini
whole groups of Akshohinis. Saptadasha 17. Ati Bishanaha, very fierce. Ta, all of them. Ramaha, Lord Parashurama. Ekaha, alone. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Asudaya, killed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Upon seeing Parashurama, Kartavir Arjuna immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry, soldiers equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, rishtis, satagnis, shaktis, and many other similar weapons to fight against him. Kartavir Arjuna sent 17 full Akshohinis of soldiers to check Parashurama, but Lord Parashurama alone killed all of them. Purport. The word Akshohini refers to a military phalanx consisting of 21,870 chariots and elephants, 109,350 infantry soldiers, and 65,610 horses. An exact description is given in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva, second chapter, as followed. Eko rato gajaschaika nara pancha padataya trayascha turagastajnai patir ityabhidhyate patim tu trigunam etam vidu senamukam buddha srini senamukam yeko guma ityadhidhyate Chayoguma gano nama vahini tu ganastraya shutas tisra tu vaina pichane ti vichakshanai tamus tu pritanas tishas chamas tishas te vanikini anikinim dasa gunam ahur akshohinim buddha akshohinyas tu shankyata ratanam dijasatama Sankhya Ganita Tattvagnai Sahasranyeka Vimchatai Satanyupari Chastocha Bhuyastatacha Saptiti Gajanam Tuparimanam Tavat Evata Nirdishet Deyam Tata Sahasram Tu Sahasrani Tata Nava Naranam Adipantachat Tatani Chinitanaga Panchashasti sahasrani tatasvanam satani cha dasotarani satchahur yathavad abhisankhaya etam akshohinim purahu sankhya tattva vidho janaha. One chariot, one elephant, five infantry soldiers, and three horses are called a pati by those who are learned in the science. The wise also know that a senamukha is three times that what a pati is. Three senamukhas are known as one galma. Three galmas are called a gana, and three ganas are called a vahini. Three vahinis have been referred to by the learned as a pratana. Three pratanas equal one chamu, and three chamus equal one anikini. The wise refer to 10 ikinis as one Akshohini. The chariots of an Akshohini have been calculated at 21,870 by those who know the science of such calculations. O best of the twice born, and the number of elephants is the same. The number of infantry soldiers is 109,350, and the number of horses is 65,610. This is called Akshohini. This is called an Akshohini. Om Namo Bhagavate, Namo Vishnu Praya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Prachayane, Nirvishesha Shunyavari Pashyata Adeshitayane, Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripasindhubhyeva Chapaditanam Pavaneva, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Alright, so Kartavir Arjuna is sending his full army to attack Parashurama, who has come to seek revenge. Kartavir Arjuna stole the Kamadhenu from Parashurama's father, Jamadagna. So it's described in this verse that Kartavir Arjuna sent a whole 17 Akshohinis. 17 Akshohinis and Prabhupada in the purport quotes the Mahabharata explaining what an Akshohini is. 18? It says 17 here in the purport. Oh, and the Mahabharata is 18. Okay. So, just one Akshohini is 109,000 soldiers, 109,350 soldiers and elephants, and 65,000 horses, something, other amount of chariots. So 17 times 109,000 soldiers is how many people Lord Parashurama killed, alone, killed all of them. In the previous verses, it described the weapons that Parashuram was holding when he came. He said, holding a chopper, a shield, a bow, an arrow. It said that Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deer skin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like the sunshine. So, this is the result of Kartavir Arjuna having stolen the Kamadhenu cow. So he's got Parashurama coming to him, and he's now in big trouble. He sent his whole army to him, and Parashurama killed his entire army. So you can only guess what's coming next. I'm sure that they're gonna have to fight, and most likely Kartavir Arjuna will be defeated by Lord Parashurama. It's in the verse 30, it says that Lord Parashurama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Tarama, what is it? Let's see. Tarama Eko Bhagavan Asudayat. So Lord Parashurama is Bhagavan. So he is the reservoir of all strength, all power. So he has the power to kill 100,000 people times 17. So I wanted to connect this verse to the Sri Isha Upanishad. There's a verse that makes a lot of sense. The first verse of the Isha Upanishad, it is something that Kartavir Arjuna seems to be have missed in his studies of the Vedic literature. So the verse goes, Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yad Kincha Jagatam Jagat Tena Tak Tena Bhunjita Magritha Kasya Svidhanam. Everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So this is a verse explaining how to live in harmony with the Bhagavan, with Krishna, with the laws of the universe, is that You see that everything in the universe belongs to Krishna, belongs to Bhagavan. So you only accept those things necessary for yourself, and you don't try to encroach on other people's property and consume exceedingly so much, always trying to take more and more wealth. But this verse is saying we just accept those things necessary for ourselves. Prabhupada often says what's necessary to keep body and soul together. So enough to live a simple life, and so we can practice bhakti, practice yoga, practice Krishna consciousness. We just need enough for that. People who try to acquire more and more beyond their quota, it's described in the third verse of the Sri Ishupanishad what happens to people like that. Asurya namate loka andena tamasavitaha tamste pritabhiga janti ye ke chatmahano janaha. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So this verse describes a person who doesn't follow the principle, the Ishavasyam principle of only accepting the quota and taking more than necessary. It's described that they enter into the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So this is the result of this greed and this nature to take what doesn't belong to us. We're in our Bhakti Shastra class yesterday, we're making a picture of these verses from mantras 1 through 3 of the Ishupanishad, and we drew like a cartoon of Krishna in the center, and there's like fruits behind under Krishna's feet, and then on one side we have someone who is making an offering to Krishna and saying these are yours. So he's using Krishna's energy to worship Krishna, so he's offering the fruits back to Krishna. Then on the other side there's a person who is trying to take it and say mine, and then So we just say like this, we made like a check mark, this is what you do, and like this is what you don't do. So we don't take and take from Krishna, try to exploit his energy and try to steal and enjoy for ourselves separately and run away and just try to live independently and just whatever we can do, we try to cheat, steal, anything we can do just to get our own satisfaction. So we use these pictures to summarize this verses of the Ishupanishad. Like the proper thing is to see that everything belongs to Krishna, everything belongs to the Supreme. In the first verse of the Ishupanishad, it's Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachite Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. So this is a nice verse that explains that there's a complete reality that we're a part of. It's a nice connection verse where it's not speaking specifically of Krishna, but it's speaking of the complete reality. Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam. So this complete reality is what everything emanates from. It's a nice meditation for me, because coming from such a degraded background, it's a little bit easy to picture, okay, there's a complete reality, and this complete reality is complete in itself, and everything emanates from this complete reality, and this is what I'm a part of. So I'm a small part of this complete reality. And then the next verse is saying everything in the universe belongs to this complete reality, Isha. It uses the word Isha, or there's, so the next time, besides just the Om Purnam, it becomes Isha, so a controller, a supreme controller of reality. So The next thing is to think everything belongs to this Isha, or to this Om Purnam, this complete reality. And so we don't try to exploit it. A person who just takes what is necessary and offers everything back to Krishna can go on working in this way for hundreds of years. That sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. So when we accept only what we need and we offer everything back to Krishna, we get freed from the reactions. In the material world, everything it has a karmic reaction. And there's so much intricate bondage. Everything is intertwined. Everything that we do, all the food that we get comes from a certain person who is performing a certain action. We're in the city where all these people are performing a certain type of karma. And so if we don't offer everything back to Krishna, we'll be intertwined within the karma. If we just take the bhoga and enjoy it ourselves, we're taking on the karma of what those people had to go through to get those foodstuffs. But if we offer it to Krishna and we do everything as an offering for Krishna, we're freed of the bondage. We ride the train and the karma of the person driving the train and the people on it they have an accumulated karma. But if we're on the train chanting and we're on the train as a service, doing our duty to serve Krishna, then we're freed of the bondage, even though we're in the same situation. That's the Ishavasyam principle of seeing, being in touch with the complete reality and trying to work towards living our lives in accordance with Isha, with Bhagavan. So in this way, we get freed from the reactions of karma and we get liberated from the material bondage. The Isha Upanishad is such a nice text. I'm just trying to share some things from my studies of the Isha Upanishad. It goes all the way from there up to the end of the Isha Upanishad, where the person, the speaker of the Isha Upanishad, is praying to this Om Purnam. He's saying, please remove your effulgence so I can see your face. And it says, please remember all that I've done for you, all the sacrifices I've done. I'm a great sinner. I'm totally in Maya. But please remember the sacrifices I've done. Om Krito Smara, Kritam Smara, Krito Smara, Kritam Smara. So this is a nice prayer to remember. Saying, Lord, please remember the things that I've done for you. Please overlook my shortcomings. And so it goes from that broad conception of Om Purnam and Ishavasyam to Hiran Mayena Patrina, remove your effulgence, I want to see your face. So it's a really nice meditation of going from just understanding that there's a complete reality that we're a part of to that there's a person behind the complete reality, and we want to approach that person and have a relationship with that person. So it's a really essential text. It's short and sweet. I'm really grateful for studying it. Just one more point, second point that I want to make from the Bhagavad Gita. I spoke about this verse at the yoga studio yesterday. Intertwine it within these verses. Chapter 6, text 20 through 23. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. In the purport, Prabhupada explains that if we enter deeply into our spiritual practices, we become unaffected by all the craziness that's happening in the world. If we go deep into Krishna consciousness, we enter into this state of happiness within. And then it says that even in the midst of the greatest difficulty, one is never shaken. So the reason I'm sharing this verse is it's chapter 6, text 20 through 23. So the reason I'm sharing this is because in this verse there's like, you know, people being killed all over the place, like 100,000 people times 17. It just reminds me of what's going on in the world now. Although, because it's the Bhagavatam and because it's like Lord Parashurama, it seems like it's not so crazy. Like, it's like, but if we were there, like watching, like seeing 100,000 people die all around us, like, be like, what's going on here? It's like so crazy. Basically, I was talking to my dad, and I heard that there's another shooting, like a mass shooting, recently in Texas, in a Christian church. Some person came in and killed a bunch of people, like over 20 people, 26 people, yeah. And in Chicago, even just in our neighborhood, we've had two people being killed recently, just in our neighborhood. Plus, like the mass shooting in Las Vegas, a mass killing in New York in the last month. So this is the state of the world, in the state of America, is that people are dying and people are getting killed and people are going crazy. It's like, it's really just chaos in our cities in America, due to all the ignorance and sinful activity. It's just degradation after degradation. And so we have to learn how to still practice yoga, practice bhakti in the midst of this chaos, in the midst of all this killing. We have to get to the transcendental platform, because it's really getting worse and worse. And it doesn't look like in the near future we'll be able to solve all the material problems in this world, as a society, in our ISKCON society. But what we can do is go deep and deeper and deeper into our spiritual practice. We become fixed in our practice, in our connection with Krishna. So even in the midst of all these difficulties, we have to go deeper into our spiritual life and enter into this state where we're fixed. We're fixed. One is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. So Prabhupada says something pretty profound in the purport. I'm trying to find it here. So as long as the material body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body, namely eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. But a person who is in pure bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain, and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness. He is callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of most dear relatives. But he is always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.14,
Agama paino nityas tums titikshasvabharata. He endures all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way, he achieves the highest perfection in yoga practice.
So, from my understanding, this state of fixed consciousness in the bhakti process is known as nishta, where we don't ever become shaken in performing our Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada says something pretty profound. He says that he is callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. So it's not so easy to speak about like such a difficult circumstance from like a detached like position when it's not actually happening to me. It's like when it actually happens to me, it'll be like, oh man, like then it becomes real. Like it's a when you're attached to a relative or attached to something else and something crazy happens, like it does in the material world, and inevitably somebody dies, somebody has a really bad accident, things like that. But this is describing the stage of nishta in bhakti yoga, that no matter what, you still engage in your duties of Krishna consciousness, you still push forward. And we have to sober ourselves and realize that these things will happen. And these things are inevitable. It's part of the material world. We read about it all the time. Death, old age, disease, birth, rebirth. We read it, hear it every day, and then when it actually happens close to our heart, then it's a different story. So these things are to prepare us for these crazy things that happen in the material world as a result of Kali Yuga, and even in all ages there's death, birth, old age and disease. So we have to go deeper and get to this point where we are completely fixed in yoga, fixed in a trance of devotional service. In the sixth chapter, it's called Dhyana Yoga, so it's describing the process of just sitting in meditation and becoming fixed in samadhi. But our samadhi is more so fixed in the duties of Krishna consciousness. We don't sit around and meditate all day. We have a lot of services to do. We have a mission to carry out, Srila Prabhupada's mission, like I was speaking about yesterday. The mission is to preach, spread the Sankirtan movement, and to establish cow protection and agricultural projects as the second half of the mission. So we have a lot of work to do, but in that work we carry out that duty, and that is the trance of bhakti yoga. We become fixed in our service, and within our service, when we don't shake from that at any point, then we experience this transcendental happiness that comes from a long years, thousands of years of practice of Ashtanga yoga. You can maybe stay in samadhi all the time. You can live in the forest. You can, like Dhruva Maharaj. But we can become fixed in the service, in the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and we engage our senses and our mind in the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and we become to the level of nishta. And it's a similar experience of samadhi, where our mind doesn't disturb us anymore. We just keep executing Krishna consciousness, keep executing our service to Srila Prabhupada. And it's a similar state of samadhi, but it's an active state where we're engaging in spiritual activities. So that's the difference between Ashtanga yoga and bhakti yoga, is that we don't have to stop acting. That's a major message of the Bhagavad Gita. It's instead act as a service for Krishna. We don't have to renounce and go to the forest if that's not our duty. Like Arjuna, he's a warrior, so he was in samadhi when he was fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He's in nishta, he's fixed in his service. He is experiencing this self-realization and the rejoicing in the self, rejoicing in our relationship with the Supreme. So we have to do this in the midst of Kali Yuga, Chicago, in the city, Ugra Karma of Chicago. We just walk outside and it's just total nescience everywhere. And we have to become fixed in the service of Srila Prabhupada, and then we totally are in like a bubble of safety from all the karmic reactions that are going on in Chicago. Oftentimes I hear that Chicago was a place where they was a major slaughterhouses in the, for a long time. Jitendra probably knows the details, but so because of this, you can see that there's reactions going on. The atmosphere is quite disturbed, and it's just like a snowball effect of Ugra Karma, of killing, all ignorance and destruction going on. And so if we have to stay fixed and focused in our service, otherwise it affects us a lot. But if we can become fixed like Chitendriya Prabhu in the service of Srila Prabhupada, then you can stay in Chicago for your whole lifetime and stay in a transcendental position. So that's what I have to share. A few points I spoke about. The Ishavasyam principle, how we have to see that everything belongs to Krishna, and we don't, we use everything, offer everything back to Krishna, and we get freed from the karmic reactions. Whereas Kartavir Arjuna, he's trying to take more for himself. He wants the Kamadenu, he wants more power, he wants more prestige. And then this comes and Parshurama comes and finishes him, because he's breaking the principles of Ishavasyam, that everything belongs to Krishna. He's trying to get more and more than than belongs to him. And then I spoke just at the end of entering into a state of fixed consciousness, and described as samadhi in yoga, or nishta in the bhakti yoga praxis, where we just become fixed in our service in the midst of all the craziness that's going on in the world. The only answer is to become fixed in the service of Srila Prabhupada. Bhakti yoga is the root, watering the roots of all the problems. So we have to go deeper into that, and then we can help some people also. But it's the root, and it saves us. It's like being in a bubble away from all the Ugra Karma that's going on in Chicago and Kali Yuga. So those are some points I'd like to share. I think it's working. The other mic is working. Not working? You can take this.
Jai Prabhu, Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. I also appreciate your class and some points you reminded me of what Prabhupada said. You quoted a verse from the Ishopanishad, the invocation, Om Pranama Da Pranami Dam. If one is devoted to Bhagavan, then he finds his life is complete. And we see that Kartavir Arjuna was incomplete because he didn't add Krishna to his life. And Prabhupada often gives the example that we may have so many zeros in our life, our opulences, but they're actually all worthless unless we add Krishna, the one in our life. And This reminds me of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He spoke a verse to Rupa Goswami. This is the chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's called Chaitanya Instructs Rupa Goswami. He says, Krishna Bhata Nishkama Ata Eva Shant Bhuti Muti Siddhi Kami Sakaliya Shant. That the only thing you need in your life is Krishna. We can see that the Goswamis, they practically had nothing, but they were still, they had zero opulences, but they were still satisfied. And Kartavirya Arjuna, he had unlimited opulences, but he was still dissatisfied. So that goes along with my point I want to mention. You actually mentioned all the points I wanted to mention today about the killings and this and that. So Kartavirya Arjuna is kind of like us. We always think, how can my life be much better? It doesn't matter how good things going on, how can my life be much, much better? And so he was satisfied, but then he was envious of Parashuram's father. And same with Hiranyakashipu, he had everything in the universe, everyone under control, but one thing didn't go right in his life. His Prahlad disagreed with him. His son, Prahlad, said, my father, you're not God. And he was still dissatisfied. How can my life be much better? So that's kind of my question, is that even as practicing devotees, we may have no possessions, you were mentioning it, but still we want to possess controllership. You know, how can this devotee be more humble because he's annoying the heck out of me? But we could see, if we keep things in perspective, that people are being murdered outside, raped, tortured, and we have so much opulence, deities, prasadam, so much, but still, you know, we get annoyed with devotees. And that's considered an aparadha. And this is my last point, maybe you could expand on it. At the end of chapter 9 of Jiva Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes a verse from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. He says there are six causes of degradation and fall down. And one of them is to not be happy around Vaishnavas. That's one of the offenses. And we may consider it a small thing, but we can see that a spark can turn into a forest fire. So when we're unhappy around Vaishnavas, then we wonder, you know, what, that's generally why people leave, you know. How can my life improve? How can this devotee work according to my ideals? So maybe you could explain how could we be grateful and keep things in perspective. So, Hare Krishna.
Doesn't come off. Yeah, I'm also trying to learn that point. I appreciate the point you made about there's so much degradation going on and such a great opulence of in Krishna consciousness, such a benediction to be in. Even just the opportunity to do any little service in the temple or anything, when it comes down to it, it's saving us from ugra karma and inevitable degradation. So I'm working on that point myself in my own life. Like, my mind also is saying, oh, it should be better, we should be doing this, we should be doing that, I should be here, I should be there. But I'm trying to just not listen to my mind so much. Like, in the second chapter, it says that, like, one who just tolerates the desires that come in, like a river's going into the ocean. So just letting them come and go and just staying with the service, staying in the association of devotees, just trying to develop that mood of gratitude. Usually Krishna has to throw us some curveballs, some crazy circumstances where we then are like, okay, I'll take shelter of you fully now, because something crazy happens, like in the material sense. Nothing's really that crazy, like it's all like expected, but since we're absorbed in material energy, it's like, it's pretty crazy, but it's all explained in the scriptures of what's going on. Nothing's outside of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What's going on in Kali Yuga, it's all stated there. But still, when we see it, we're like, oh man. But it's all stated in the Bhagavatam. But yeah, I have to develop this more gratitude and dependence on Krishna and the devotees and our institution. Everything that we have, it's so easy to say we don't have this, we don't have that, you know, the buildings like this, the buildings like that, the prasadams like this, prasadams like that. Such a horrible tendency. Though we can seek to improve the standard and things like that, but we should do so with great gratitude and respect. And, yeah, so those are some thoughts. Do you have anything you'd like to share? We end at
8:30.
Start.
Thank you, Ru.
So, we can see here Kartavirya Arjuna was a great, powerful king. He did the tapasya, I mean austerity, for a long time for Dattatreya. Even those who are kami, I mean those who are expecting from that tapasya, they are getting something, but later on they are, you know, it will harm for them. But those who are Vishnu Bhakta, Krishna Bhakta, he mentioned that verse, you know, Krishna Bhakta Niskam Atayava Shant. Like that, we can see in the many, in Puranas, there's many, you know, examples, like Ravana, he did tapasya for Shivaji, you know, Lord Shiva, and then he got the benediction. Now, he's like, you know, he controlled all the senses when he was doing, right? Right? He's all the same, because he's thinking my aim is to get that benediction, right? When he get that, after that he like, you know, asuras, he couldn't control himself, right? But we can see as a Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva, especially Dhruva Maharaj, so he has one aim, because he is thinking my stepmom is not allowing to sit on my, you know, father's lap, on the father's seat. So he was quite, he's a Kshatriya, so he was upset. And then he went to his mom and he asked, how can I sit on that seat? So she said, only Lord Vishnu can do it. So where can I find him? She said, you can find him in the forest. He is small. So he went to the forest. So he was thinking, okay, I will get it. But he did austerity, you know, that is, you know, it's very difficult. You know, within 6 months, he got to Lord. After that, what happened? One Lord appeared in front of him and he was asking for a benediction. And he said, oh my Lord, I was coming for the, you know, all these things. I was coming for the, you know, piece of glass. But now I got jewels, diamonds. So I don't need all these things, that, you know, piece of glass. So we can see within 6 months, 1 6 year, 5 years, boy, he could control his senses, even after benediction. He was asking, you know, Lord was asking for benediction. Even before benediction, he controlled. Okay, I don't need anything. But we can see as a Ravana, Kartavya, Arjuna, you know, other Asuras, even other person, we can see, they can't control themselves. You know, so, he has so many, you know, in Bhagavatam, there's some, you know, example we can see. So, if we sincerely do sadhana or bhakti, so we can control our senses. And then we have to, Prabhupada many times mentioned about that, you know, Sankirtan. So we are thinking about this is happening here and there, but what we are doing for them? We are not chanting, we are not doing Sankirtan, then how can they will come here? And until and unless they will not know about it, they will not come. So when they will, you know, get information about Krishna, they will automatically come. So we are inside the house, we are talking, but sometime we have to move, sometime we have to go to outside and do Sankirtan, and, you know, we can involve them with the Sankirtan, and they slowly and slowly they will realize and they can come. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, otherwise other incarnation came and killed demons and all these things happened. So he realized, this is happening, you know, before the other planet, and after that, you know, same country, after the same house, you know, you can see. In Mahabharata, there's one family, they are fighting, you know, before there's another country like Ravana and Rama, another country. In this Kali Yuga, in same body, you know, one body, there's two kinds, Asura and Asura. So we can see, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can, now how can you kill the Asura in your body? By chanting and clean your heart, then you can kill him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu give us the nice, you know, path. Prabhupada teach us how to do it. And we can learn from his life. So hopefully one day it will happen if we practice nicely. And especially I wanted to listen about, Prabhupada was saying about Chicago's situation. I know Jitendra Prabhu, he knows better than us. So if he's here.
Was I supposed to say something? Pardon me? After the Civil War in 1865, they established the, they call it the back of the yards neighborhood where they slaughter all these animals. And the devotees used to do sankirtan over there. And they would approach the people and they were like zombies. And the smell was so great. Then I think they talked to Srila Prabhupada and they said it's very difficult to establish a temple in Chicago because it's such a sinful place. But he said at some time or other it'll become one of our major centers. So I believe the slaughterhouse were there open for almost 100 years. I think they closed in 1970. But, you can find more out about it through history. But a lot of these slaughterhouses moved to the western states like Nebraska, and you know they still have that. But it's mostly by people coming from, you know, like from Vietnam or you know some you know different fourth what sixth world country or you know not to. But usually when people come, they have to take these jobs because there's no other jobs for them. But they have a high rate of people getting injured on the job, you know, like cutting themselves or falling. So it's very, very dangerous from start to finish. So they don't really last in those jobs too long, as far as my understanding. But that's you can find out more about it if you like. Hare Krishna.
Thank you all for your participation. Appreciate it very much. Gantara Shima Bhagatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Tai Gora Premanandi Hari Hari Bo Noja.